You're listening to an Olive Pit production. Welcome to the show. I'll be your host. Let's get to it.
Hey guys, welcome back to, this is episode 5, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, right. Episode 5 of Look for the Helpers. Today we have Chief DeSico.
Hello,
from
everybody.
Lee County EMS. Welcome, Chief. How are you?
Good. Pleasure to be here.
We're so happy you could join us. And of course, the infamous Dr. Nicole Navega.
Do I have to be infamous?
Well, actually, weren't we going with a different tag for you from our last? Oh, no, it was, I was supposed to have different music this time.
Yeah, I needed my Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, Welcome to the Jungle was supposed to be playing.
We have to start over.
Yeah. We'll be right back. I have some icebreakers here. We like to do a little bit of icebreaker before every show.
Now you haven't been nervous.
And so I've got a list here.
Fun.
They're very, very good. You can choose. I'll give you some topics and you can choose, or I can just pick one. Let me give you the topics
first.
I have
to tell you that I have a new idea about this.
Okay.
I feel like some of the ones that we've had so far are so good and so fun that I almost feel like we should start collecting those and make the new guest answer all of the previous icebreakers.
Okay, I like that.
And then they can pick a new one too.
Yeah, all right.
It's not that many.
No, it's really not.
Pressure's on.
This one, you may understand what I'm about to tell you, and I may have to have Nicole translate for me.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, so this is quirky icebreakers. Quirky, you know that word?
Yep.
Okay.
Wait, what do you think that word means?
Quirky?
Yeah.
Odd.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. See? Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're the only person who's understood he says.
They think I'm saying corgi or
quirky.
But
it sounds like he's saying
it was very clearly
C-O-R-K-Y, quirky.
It was very clearly quirky, right?
Quirky.
Yes.
Saying it now. Yeah. Quirky.
See, he's as confused as I am when you say I don't say it right.
No, you guys are both.
Okay.
You guys are out of your minds.
Food and drink. Personal. General. Entertainment. Hobby. Here's one of my favorites. Have you ever?
The G-rated version.
Or sci-fi.
That's important.
It's very G, yes.
So would you like to choose one or would you like me to choose one for you?
Why don't you pick?
Okay, I'll pick.
Ooh. Oh. Trust, I like that.
Okay, we're going to go food and drink. Okay? And this is one that we have not used.
All right.
Okay. What's the weirdest food you've ever eaten?
The weirdest food I've ever eaten. I can't remember the name of it. But there are these weird type of mussels in Portugal.
Okay.
They look like aliens, and I had a lot of trouble.
I think all mussels look like aliens.
I had a lot
aliens.
Of trouble.
No, these were like green, and it was...
Really?
I tried them. I was a good sport. I would not recommend.
10 out of 10, don't recommend.
10 out of 10, it's probably a zero.
Really?
Okay. I had to almost immediately purge them.
Oh.
Really? Wow, okay,
that's
bad.
Not good.
Kind of gross.
That's not good.
Sorry for oversharing.
No, that's okay.
I thought for sure you were going to give me something from Singapore or some other
like bugs.
Asian country because that was going to be mine.
Yeah.
Well,
you want to rethink that?
Well, I mean, fish eyes in China.
Yeah, no.
A fried pig ear. That was kind of.
See, a fried pig ear doesn't sound so bad. Fish eyes, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out.
I'm out. I can barely do a whole fish, like, you know, Spanish whole fish.
Yeah.
I'm turned off by the meal altogether.
I didn't want to be rude. Like,
right, sure. And you're in China, right? So there's a lot of customs that are very different. So
you just kind of had to close your eyes and swallow.
Yeah.
No.
Mm, okay.
Pretty gross.
Definitely no.
10 out of 10 reasons not to go to China.
Exactly.
All right, Nicole, how about you?
No, mine was Thailand. Very similar thing, just kind of street food, which is, you know, they have on little skewers, you know, scorpions and crickets and spiders and stuff like that. So.
And you ate them?
I would, like, take a bite of one and be like, oh, hell no. And then they'd, like, try to give me another one. So, like, I would take a bite of it, but
not
have a lot of water. I was done.
Yeah, okay. For myself... Gosh, I guess I'm pretty lame. So I can't think of anything that even equates close to scorpions or fish eyes. I got nothing.
Plus,
I pretty much like everything I put in my mouth. I can see how this could be tasty. I can't think of, I can't even think of a food. Well, so I'm not a big fan of for the longest time, I thought I hated mangoes.
Love mango.
Me too.
But apparently there's, so when I talk about the stringy mangoes, you know what I'm talking about? Okay, that's what I've always had. Can't stand them. 10 out of 10, not interested. It's too fibrous, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I can't do it. But there is a Kent mango that doesn't have any of that, and I do particularly like that mango. But stringy mangoes, no. And for some reason, that's only the ever mango I had ever had.
That's weird.
Yeah, and just would never eat mango. I would stay away from mango altogether, right, just because of that. And now I found the ultimate mango, which is a Kent, apparently.
I'm familiar with that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, you know what this is reminding me of, and I feel like you should go at least give mango flavor a new shot, is the taco stands on 82, the ones that are owned by the family members.
Right.
The one that has juice does an unbelievable mango juice over there.
Really?
Yes.
Well, we have a Kent mango tree in the backyard.
Oh, you do?
Well, the neighbor does.
Okay.
So we do, because it hangs over the fence. And so we get what we can pick. Right. Actually, we can have any of them, but
the dogs do it for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I've recently found the mango that I do enjoy. And so,
okay, yeah. I like it.
Maybe there's hope for you with scorpions.
I don't think so, but you never know. I kind of want to ask him the other two questions that I'm thinking of.
Okay.
The last one we talked about was, well, the last two were, if you were a WWE wrestler.
Yes.
What would your intro music be, and what would your name be? I think this is a good one for you.
Well, first off, I wasn't really a wrestling fan.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Boo. Yeah,
boo. Yeah.
So it makes this question difficult.
But you can understand the premise of the question, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what they did.
I can say theme music. I don't know. Sharp dressed man.
Okay. All right. I like that. Like that.
And the name?
Yeah, your name.
Yeah, what would your name be?
I have no idea.
I think I would have been the Buddha.
The Buddha. I like that. Yeah. I like that. And would you have meditation music as you're coming out?
Yeah, I mean, it something only makes like sense.
I like it.
A gong?
Yeah. Dun. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah.
In an orange monk outfit.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
You didn't say this last time,
though. No, I know. I just thought of it.
See, so you can think about it. Yeah. Come back to us with the name.
I'm thinking, but.
Wasn't there another one? Oh, famous people. Who's the most.
Yeah, famous
or
people that you've
either
met.
Your favorite famous person or anybody famous.
This is a timely one. So I was in middle school, and I was at Fort Wilderness with a friend. And there's a pool there that, if you've ever been there, it gets really crowded. So I was swimming under the water, and I like ran into this brick wall in the middle of the pool. So kind of dazed, I surface. And this guy picks
so
me
many,
up.
I have so many snide comments right now, but I'm going to keep it to myself.
No, you, go ahead. This is a safe space. But this guy picks me up, like, and I'm facing away from him, and the grip is strong, and he turns me around, and it's Hulk Hogan.
No way.
Really?
Yes.
It's That's Hulk so Hogan. Funny.
He's holding me, and I spent.
And you said you weren't even into wrestling. You met the
you
biggest
met
wrestler
wrestler
in the world.
Yes.
In a pool at Disney, yeah.
That's awesome.
And it is.
the afternoon, like swimming with his kids, and it was pretty cool. Good experience.
And when you said timely, did you mean timely because we were just talking about WWE, or timely because you just saw him at the Republican National Convention last week?
Both, actually.
Yes.
Were you there?
Very timely.
At the RNC?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I just meant on TV.
On TV. I was going to say, wow, you went.
No, I didn't actually think you went, but.
I wasn't invited.
That's cool, though.
You weren't?
No. That's cool.
You don't say.
It's shocking.
Second famous person's probably Obama.
You met Obama? Mm-hmm. Really? Where?
In St. Pete at a rally.
Oh, okay. I got real close to him at a rally in Providence, and the kid that I was with got to meet him and shake his hand. So
nice.
I didn't shake hands, but it was a...
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool.
All right, so...
We'll back up.
Yeah.
You haven't answered the question.
Which one? The famous person?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't really have one last time, but now that... We bring it back, and you had talked about
report.
Younger
this is
years.
Are you noticing a theme? The theme is he asks questions, and then is like, "I don't have anything weird. I don't have anything weird that I ate."
Well, I have never been to Singapore or Philippines. I mean, I think that's you're going to find in other cultures. You're going to find the weird stuff. I think, right?
Sure.
One day. So I met. You made me start talking about that, and his name went right out of my head. He was a sailor. Anybody good with sailing? I mean, you're from
Massachusetts,
so they sail all the time up there. You probably know exactly who I'm talking about. He was Dennis Connor.
Okay.
No, not
really.
Okay, so
not into sailing.
So there's a sailing regatta. It's the World Sailing Regatta. And he had won it several times. And I was around sailing my entire life as a kid. Can't stand sailboats now.
They scare me, actually.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have sailed from Lauderdale to New York.
Cool, really?
Yeah. I was 5 at the time, maybe a little bit younger. I don't remember much, but I do remember a couple of things. One of the things is we broke down. So my dad was moving a sailboat from Fort Lauderdale to... Ooh. New York, took us with him, broke down, and we ended up on Ellis Island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was very cool, because I remember waking up in the morning and looking up, and there's the Statue of Liberty, along with submarines coming by us. Like, very cool memory as a kid.
Yeah,
that is really cool.
But I've done a lot of sailing in my lifetime as a kid. St. Pete to Mexico was a regatta that they would sail to Isla Mujeres. And I was probably 12 at the time. Mm-hmm. And very cool, because we would get there and then we'd be there for a week. And I would hang out with all the local kids. And we befriended this one young boy, and he took us to his house. And I can remember hammocks in the house, like that's how they slept.
Yep.
And their front door was just an old wooden structure wrapped with visqueen, nailed on with soda cap.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Very cool. And then I can remember
adventure.
Being there at night, at midnight, and literally what you think of the Mexican culture is everybody's awake at midnight having a party. The kids, the 3-year-olds, everybody's awake.
Yep.
It was very cool.
That's because we need to adopt the fiesta mentality, which is nap during the day, party at night.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, we gotta make that happen.
Yeah. So Dennis Connor is my famous person.
Okay.
Yeah, which
very cool.
Isn't even really a celebrity. Nobody knows who he is.
As long as he's a celebrity to you, that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
So for this episode, we've got Chief DeSico, and we're going to talk a little bit about a few different things. And one of the big questions we have is, in an industry that's just beginning to address the stigma with first responder agencies, what are your reasons for caring about mental fitness, wellness, and with our staff, with our EMTs, paramedics, and just why is it so important to you?
From an industry perspective, it's interesting because I kind of feel like we're the front runners in the area.
Yeah.
Like name an agency that has a licensed clinical social worker, PhD, you know, badass Nicole Navega that works for them.
Right.
You're not going to find it.
It's unheard of, right?
So it is.
Was it a thought that you had, like, when you got here that, hey, we need to do this? Or was this something that kind of evolved?
I mean, I'm 25 years in healthcare.
Right.
And, you know, as a clinician, personally, I've experienced some of the same things that I think you have and the trauma that you have. And that's, you know, holding dead babies. It's, I think, the most, you know, trying calls are the, maybe not the ones you graphically see, but it's the emotional support you provide for the people that, like the spouses. And I think my experience as a clinician, I can totally vouch for the suck it up and get back to work direction that was given to me numerous times.
Right.
I can just remember, you know, how that felt. And I think you were forced to learn to kind of
compartmentalize.
Compartmentalize. That's a big word for me this morning. I'm only one coffee in. But it sucked.
Right.
It was awful. And I always remembered, like, if there was one thing I could do as a leader in an organization, it was to change kind of that direction and give people the space that they needed to grieve, to process their thoughts, and to get well again. Because I think I really believe in the snowball effect, in that if you go on this journey with me, so picture yourself as a bright, you know, brand new EMT, and you experience these small traumas over time, and you just compartmentalize them, right? A lot of times that leads to maybe the one call that breaks you leads to you starting a bad habit like drinking. Drinking leads to, you know, myriad of health problems, but also problems in your relationship with your spouse. That could potentially lead to divorce.
Right.
And the snowball just keeps bigger. Now we can talk about job performance. We can talk about suicidal thoughts and ideations. I mean, if it's not stopped or addressed or dealt with appropriately, you go down a very dark path.
Right.
So I think it's about stopping the snowball, realizing there's an issue, realizing that it's okay to talk to somebody. And I think a lot of it, we talk about a stigma, and I can't really tell if it's, so is it generational? Like, it's, if we talk about like the boomer generation, maybe that generation is less likely to accept help, admit there's a problem, and just kind of powers through things. And maybe that's because that's how they were taught. That's how it was ingrained. But I think as we get into the newer generations, I think it's becoming more accepted.
I think you're right. Yeah. And pardon me. When we started with Nicole, when Nicole started with us, actually, you know, it was something that wasn't being done, at least locally. Right. It was something that was unheard of. And I think even there was some skepticism in the beginning. I can say, speaking for myself, been in this for 20 years, had all of those calls. And I have at one point, you know, had gotten to a breaking call where I did go in and have conversation. But it was difficult. It was all through EPA, and, you know, it took time, where when we've got this asset at our fingertips, you know, when an event happens, it could have been so much different for me. Because now, and I've never, sat with Nicole from that perspective, but I imagine if that call were to happen to me today at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would be on the phone with Nicole, or could potentially be on the phone with Nicole dealing with this and trying to, you know, get through, which what took me then at that time, maybe 3 weeks, right? And so beneficial, just from somebody who's been through something like that and had to go and talk, and it helped me tremendously. I still, you know, am, I think we're all kind of at that point where I carry a lot of things with me. But I was able to talk it out and figure out some coping mechanisms, whereas now we've got this asset in house. Like, she's part of us. So, and I think that's amazing.
So you're one of the people that have gone to EAP and actually had a decent experience then.
I had a good experience because I think it was about, for me, it was about talking about it.
Right.
Right. Like, I'm sure you understand this a lot deeper than I do, but just getting it out and talking with somebody that wasn't there, that had no inkling as to, I don't know that she really understood what we do and how we do.
Right.
Right. So there was maybe a disconnection there. Right. But for me, talking it through and just saying the things out loud that you don't ever want to say out loud, that,
right,
you know, you don't want to offload on your spouse. Right. And there was a lot of other issues, you know, I mean, so I had ran a cardiac arrest on a family member, and that's like, I should have at the point been like, no. Right. But looking back, and then afterward, you know, the whole entire family, everybody is like, thank God you were there. Mm. And the only thing I keep thinking is, why the hell did I have to be there? You know what I mean? Right. And so talking about it really kind of helped. But my point is, having you here in house, you know, we can get those things done and get those people help significantly quicker. Because like I said, it took me 3 weeks before I realized, and then I had to come to, you know, terms with, hey, maybe I need something. And, you know, so right. I just think the initiative that you have taken is amazing to put you in our house where you can help everybody more quickly.
I think the other thing about it too is, you know, I always say that you and Ben were, you know, the visionaries of this. And I think you probably don't even realize how many people that you've helped just by doing it, because it's not just that I'm here inside of Lee County Public Safety and serve, you know, our public safety folks, but, you know, I've also gone on to serve the police department and the fire department, and it's sort of opened up a realm where at least people in our region, if they are struggling, at least they know that they can call somebody and that we can get them the help that they need. It may not be me. I may not be the person that can help them in that moment,
right,
because I'm busy or I'm working or whatever it is. But at least we've done some work to vet some therapists in the community to ensure that they do work with first responders. They are culturally competent in working with first responders. And we know them and we've worked with them, you know. And so I think that's the other piece about what you said earlier, which is when I came on, you were like, oh, there was some skepticism. Sure. And I would say there still is skepticism, right? There's still many people who feel like, I don't want to talk to her because she's actually a county employee, or she's, I'm too close to administration, right?
Well, I want to segue there.
Okay.
So when we talk about stigma, I think a stigma exists, you know, around mental health therapy, counseling, that kind of thing. I think it's on its way on a downward slope.
Great.
But with any stigma, I think the biggest thing is you have to, it's like almost facing any fear, whether it's heights, whether it's, people are scared of heights, but they go skydiving.
Right.
Some people are afraid to fly, but when they get on their first plane, they realize it's not that bad. So I think trying it is important. That's how you break it down in your own mind. When Nicole came on board, one of the first things that we talked about is boundaries. I meet with Nicole every 2 weeks for an hour. That meeting is for me. That is my time to decompress. So I see Nicole, and I can remember we were kind of deep into the weeds of an issue that I was experiencing, and we talked, and it's like we're talking, having a conversation, and this last hour was therapy. That was the stigma we're talking about.
Right.
it was a conversation, you know, that was it. But the conversation, you know, helped redirect my thoughts, put me in a better place, gave me a new perspective and way to look at things. And, you know, I'm better because of it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you say, I think you, that stigma is headed down, right? I think you're right. And I think that has to do with the generation, because like you said, our generation, you know, was the rub some dirt on it. It'll go away. You're fine. And I even find myself today, you know, like, kind of compartmentalizing a little bit, but, I don't have a problem opening up or anything, but I just feel like I can do this, you know, I have this. Whereas maybe our younger generation is grown up and a little bit more open to the idea of talking with a therapist, right? And I think that's great. We, if we need it, we need it, and it's okay. Like, and I think we need to get to that point where it's okay to not be okay, right? And it's okay to ask for help, because that's the most important thing. And I think the reason we're on that downward slope is because we're getting those newer generation employees in, and they're more open to it.
And I think we've spent a lot of time over the past almost 4 years that I've been here of trying to spread the word to say that it is okay.
Yeah.
Right. That we do talk about difficult calls, that we do talk about the fact that life is hard, and sometimes people feel changed by calls. You know, sometimes they feel within, you know, the first couple of weeks, like something's wrong with them, right? They start to feel like, I don't feel myself, I'm a little off, or I'm experiencing these particular symptoms. And they sometimes really just need the reassurance to say, like, you're good, right? You're just having a normal reaction to abnormal circumstances.
And one more thing I would add to anybody out there that's even thinking or not thinking about it is, you give it that chance once. It's just like those weird foods that we all ate, right? You gave it a chance. You might have liked it. I think if you give it a chance once, you'll realize it's not as hocus focus or whatever your reasoning might be, right? It's not that at all. And that's what I realized when I went and did with EAP, that I think you just need to give yourself a chance and open up once, and you'll realize that it's really not that bad.
Yeah. And the truth is that not every therapist is for you, right? And so I'm not for everyone. I realize that. And sometimes finding a therapist requires you to start and stop and start again and try somebody new and, you know, find the right fit, right? Find a person who is the right fit. I think we've talked about this on here before. And although there are all sorts of evidence-based treatment modalities for all sorts of certain things, the research tells us that the most important thing is the relationship between you and the therapist.
Yeah.
And so as long as you find somebody that you feel like you click with, and usually people know,
yeah,
right? You know, within the first 5 minutes of sitting down with someone, whether or not this is probably going to be a good fit or not.
So Chief, when you,
before you move on,
yeah,
I think you touched on something that I don't want to lose. I think the elephant in the room when it comes to the stigma is probably vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
If most of us out here in our industry are type A people, right?
Absolutely.
Right. And I think one of the greatest fears or dislikes is being vulnerable. No one wants to be vulnerable. And making yourself, you have to be vulnerable in your relationship with your therapist or, you know, the person you're working with.
Right.
So I think a big part of that is being able to trust the person you're talking to. And I just wanted to kind of close the loop that when we talked about boundaries, when Nicole first came on, I committed to her that I would never ask. And she has, just like we're bound by HIPAA and we can't share information, she has the same licensing requirements. She can't share any information, but we committed in our first meeting that I would never ask about any individual's issues. And we don't discuss employees' issues that she deals with. So I wanted to make that clear that there is a boundary, And that's a boundary that we respect and that we won't cross.
Right. And that's good to know for anybody that might be thinking about it. And I'm glad you brought up vulnerability, because it's one thing that we usually try to squeeze into everyone. And whether we try, we actually don't try and squeeze it in. It just usually always comes out. And I think vulnerability is so important. Like you said, because if you can just become vulnerable once, you'll realize that it's not so bad. You're vulnerable with those certain people, right? And I think as long as you can do that, and maybe it's Nicole, and maybe it's a therapist, maybe it's your partner, as long as you can find somebody, right? I think that's the most important thing.
I think what's interesting, though, is it's a big word. I'm trying to think how to describe this. I think there's different levels of vulnerability. And I think the ultimate goal for Nicole and her sessions, having personally experienced this, is like, how willing are you to be vulnerable? They're like, you have to get to the core problem, to the root of the situation, like you have to get completely exposed.
Right.
Right. But as humans, we tend to lie to ourselves. Like, oh, this is okay. I can deal with this. And throughout the process of going through therapy or counseling or having a conversation, I mean, you can tell those lies to try to, you know, I think it's a natural like defense mechanism, right? Like, oh, I'm fine. I don't need to share all of this. But
when in reality, that portion that you may be withholding could be the key.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes the things that could seem small and insignificant in conversations with people who you trust, no matter who that is, sometimes the most powerful impact is when you become vulnerable and you realize that the person sitting across from you isn't judging you, right? That you can have that conversation, be safe, and realize this person cares about me for me regardless of what I tell them, regardless of what dumb thing, you know, that I did that I'm talking about. And because the truth is that we all have core negative beliefs. And when we peel away the layers of our core negative beliefs, one of the common things that we have together as human beings is this idea that we're not enough, right? That somehow we're not enough.
Right.
And that shows up in our lives all the time, professionally, in relationships all the time. And so sometimes when we can look at ourselves from this perspective of not just vulnerability, but also accountability, like self-accountability, because I think ultimately that's where it leads you to, is that when you become vulnerable, there's almost on the other side of that this idea that it brings self-awareness, and with self-awareness brings, I think, self-accountability. And I think when you have somebody across the table from you or across the, you know, sitting with you who doesn't judge you is the most powerful part of a therapeutic relationship or a peer support relationship or just kindness, right, within one another.
Yeah.
What I think is important, too, is, like, you're unique. Nicole Navega is unique, and we're lucky.
You, too, are unique.
We won't go there, but
it's true. Thank you.
Not everyone understands, like, first responders, paramedics, EMTs, cops, firemen, we are a different breed of people. And I think we're conditioned through the responses to calls that we have. That's what makes us unique. I'm jealous of the EMTs and paramedics that get to go out and make the meaningful impact. And I've realized that it's my responsibility to ensure that they're able to do that. And that's budgeting, that's equipment, that's land purchases, that's all the boring stuff that I found myself doing now.
By the way, when I saw you at InService on Thursday and you were giving your PowerPoint presentation with all of the blueprints, this is exactly what I thought. I was like, these are the massive things that you're responsible for that I think sometimes people don't take into consideration.
But
please continue.
It's while it's boring, and kind of mundane work, it's, to me, it's fearful sometimes because there is a lot of responsibility, you know, from my perspective. But it's all, they're also, it's bureaucratic, it's political, it's a lot of times awful. Like, mm-hmm. And I find myself getting incredibly frustrated with delays. Like, we're, as an EMS organization, we're trained, like, you're dispatched to a call, you respond to the call, you have 10 minutes to make a diagnosis, get someone stabilized, and make a plan of action and a decision and get them to definitive care or disposition the call the way that, you know, you're trained to. And we do that efficiently, effectively, every day. I mean, our customer satisfaction scores are amazing, incredible. I would say industry leading. We function at a high level. But on the backside, it is nuts. It's frustrating. So I would say perspective. Like, when I get to a point where it's been a frustrating day, like, I've had enough, I'm boiling, there's steam coming out of my ears, I have to shut my door, turn the light off, sit back in my chair, and elevate myself to from a 200-foot view to a 30,000-foot view and realize that the organization is high functioning. We were making a considerable impact on the residents of this county. I pull up the customer satisfaction scores, the surveys, the CARES data that proves that we're the fourth highest resuscitation rate for cardiac arrests in the state, and realize that this is why it's worth it. So it's bringing myself back to the core mission that we, you know, are charged with accomplishing, and that's making the difference. That's making sure that there's not an empty chair at the table for someone's family. And those are the things that we do well. So my, this is a long way to get back to the advice.
Important stuff.
The advice that I give is that never lose. We have a very unique job. There is a small percentage of this world that can come home from a shift and say, well, today, I had a couple of unsuccessful calls. We had a pediatric cardiac arrest. But I also, like, shocked three people and brought them back from death. And because I was at work today, two people are going to live to see another day and be with their families.
Right.
If we lose sight of that importance, because it's easy to get lost and drowned by the... So maybe you go two or three shifts without a meaningful call like that, and it's your nursing home transfer. It's.
But let me just interrupt you there for a second, because I don't think we ever go a day without a meaningful call like that.
I've gone. I can remember because I worked.
But let me explain myself. Because while you might not be shocking somebody, and you might not actually be performing life-saving measures, just like all those people we just talked about where you don't know what they're going through, you might pick, and this is how I look at my day, and I think this is how I get through, because we get a lot of those, we hear a lot, oh, it's just another, you know, 90% of our calls are BS, right? Where I think it's significantly there's a lot more calls that are more important than we actually think, because we're picking these people up, and I think it's maybe not so much the life-saving interventions, but some of the meaningful time we have with these patients where you might pick up a drunk. Where, and if you could just sit with them for 10 minutes and talk to them and try and get them back on the right path. Like, I think those are meaningful calls too. And so while I might not be performing life-saving measures on anybody for 3 weeks, I still look at my shifts as meaningful calls, because I've interacted with these people who may be needing just whatever I can offer them, you know? So yeah, it's an IV. It's a little bit of fluid because they're a little tacky and they're elderly, but ultimately...
Not tacky.
Well, I mean, sometimes they are.
You bring a good point up, and I'll give you an example. So I can remember probably my first year, I was an EMT, and we respond to a cardiac arrest at a home residence. We walk in and it's a hospice patient, right? my partner, it's a scenario where, like, they had a DNR. They're obviously they're a hospice patient, but the family at the last minute, you know, when the hour comes, panicked, right? And there's two people that want everything in the world done to bring this person back, and there's the other half of the family that says, "Hey, this wasn't her wishes." So I can remember my partner spending some time with the family, reaffirming what the patient's decision was, and convincing them all to honor her wishes, and she pronounced. This is kind of where it took a turn for me. So typically in my experience, which was limited at the time, we would call the ME and we would wait for the sheriff's office to get there and we would leave. My partner goes in to the room, leaves me out with the family, and dresses the patient.
Yeah.
Covers her up, and then brings the family in to spend time with her.
Yeah.
So when you talk about a meaningful call.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. And I just think, like, you know, if we run on those calls that, and then, you know, we can notice, like, maybe while we're there, we notice they might need some extra help. And so we reach out to social while we're at the hospital. Or, you know, there's so many different ways we can do it. There's so many different ways that we can interact positively and create a positive impact in many of our patients, even though we're not doing all the fun stuff, right? I think that's honestly the majority of our job. That's how I look at my day. And I think when we talk to go back to morale, I think if we all kind of took a step back and looked at our patients as family members, right? While maybe this is not an emergency in my mind, this person has, you know, they're 80 years old. How many times I run across people who are elderly with no family, living by themselves, they're scared, right? Yeah, come on, let's go to the hospital. You know, if it's appropriate. Now, if it's not, you know, then we talk them, you know, into another route, but we're there to help them. And I think if we all took a step back and looked at our day as maybe we're not doing those life-saving performances. So yeah, we're not running emergency calls, but they are still emergencies and we are still helping people. And I think if we just change our mindset into that, we could increase morale. And I think morale is more about, you know, people feel like they're not doing what they're trained to do, right? I mean, I think that has a big portion of it. But I think they're just looking at what they're trained to do wrong, differently, well, maybe not wrong.
Maybe it's more our fault. Because what we're trained to do is respond to those emergencies. Like in the paramedic curriculum or EMT curriculum, there's not a social
component. You're right. There's nothing for, hey, this person has a, you know, just needs a little bit of help.
And that's probably a gap.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's something else I think that Nicole and I had talked about when it comes to morale in a roundabout sort of way. You know, we make, in our daily lives, we make hundreds of choices, right? And there's a couple of different ways. Nicole had brought up a couple of ways that people look at things, you know, and there's this, you feel like you're in a toxic environment, right? And you change the way, you change your environment, right? That's one way. Another way was that you feel like you're in a toxic environment and you leave your environment, right? So that there's two options. You either you're there and you change it, or you're there and you leave and you find something that's not toxic in your mind. But I think there's a third, and I think this is where people get caught up, is people feel like they're in a toxic environment and they don't, maybe they don't know how to change it or don't know what to do with it, and they stay there and they dwell in that toxic environment. I think that's another thing that brings morale down significantly. And I think we just need to realize that if you, you know, if you feel like you're in that toxic environment, there's, you make that choice, right? We make choices every day, and we make choices about our spouse and about our relationship and about at home. And if it's a bad relationship, we make choices consciously and subconsciously on how to change that. We should be doing that with our work environment too, right?
Yeah.
We should be saying, hey, I feel like I'm in this toxic environment, and whatever about it that you feel is toxic, you need to either change that aspect of how you're looking at it, or how you feel, or approach it in a way that you can make it not toxic. And if you'd feel like that's not possible, then I think you need to find something that you think is not toxic. You need to find something different. Maybe this isn't. And I know there are some people recently that we had a young girl that was working for us, and she couldn't do it. And so she chose to leave. And that's what's best for her. And I think that's amazing for her, right? Like, I think that's how we should be looking at how we move through this thing called life, right? I mean, if you think it's toxic, there's got to be a way to fix it, but don't just dwell in it.
Well, I think what's important, so we talked about vulnerability in the beginning and the willingness to become vulnerable to, you know, get better. Subconsciously, I think we allow ourselves to be more vulnerable than we think. We allow others to dictate what we believe, like you're talking about toxicity.
Right.
And it's funny because that when I think about like my stepson and how things have changed from like how he grew up to how I grew up, I think the demise is social media.
Right.
Didn't exist for me, you know, when I was growing up. And people are apt to say things on social media that if they were to say something to someone in person, they get punched in the face.
Exactly.
Right. But we ingrain ourselves and we allow other people to basically dictate how the environment is that I'm going to accept. And I think that's where it goes back to what I said earlier. You have to, I think the buzzword, and it's like never, what is your why? You can't get away from, like, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because it's a job, or am I doing this because I want to make those meaningful impacts? And I don't think we struggled, and we've invested in some software that I think will make this more possible, but I don't think we've done a great job of, like, highlighting and publishing and putting the positives out there that we can. We should probably do better with that, and we're trying to. But this organization makes, I mean, huge impacts every day, and we can't not stop and celebrate that.
Right.
And when I get to a point where I'm, like I said, I'm frustrated and there's steam coming out, that's where I go back to. And that's what brings me back to, I got to do this. I got to get through it. This is the reason.
Yeah. And you bring up something else that I wanted to touch on, and it was perfect because you said social media, and we listen to what everybody else is saying on social media, right? Like, so Nicole and I had also talked about this, where I feel like you need to surround yourself with people more successful than yourself. And what I mean by that is, if you want to be rich, you surround yourself with rich people. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you surround yourself with entrepreneurs, because you will become that, right? Like, I feel like this is just how one of my beliefs. So if you find yourself, and I also believe toxicity is a perspective. Right.
I agree.
I don't think I work in a toxic environment, but I don't make my environment that. I make it what I want it to be. And I think we all have the ability to do that. Right. And I think if you surround yourself with people, like-minded people, or that is where you want to be, you will become that. Right. If you surround yourself with people who are depressed and upset and angry, that's what you're going to be. And you might not be angry in the beginning. You might have all those positive outlooks. But if you have 15 of your friends that are all angry about something, and the more you hang out with them, you will adopt that mindset. I truly believe that.
I think the other thing too, and this isn't always a popular opinion, but that requires everything that you guys are talking about, it requires one to be self-aware.
Right.
And I think that that's one problem that people have, is that most people are kind of just walking around on autopilot. And I think to a certain extent, maybe that's true more so of first responders than other people. I don't know if I could make that argument or not, but they certainly have reason to want to be on autopilot, right? To be in this state of like, I'm a little bit numbed out because I've got so much stuff in my bucket. That there certainly is good reason to people to be a little numbed out. But I do think one of the things that happens to therapists as they are training to become therapists is that we have to be very aware of all of our interactions all the time, because we have to think about like, how might this impact the person that I'm working with, right? The one thing that I want to do is support somebody, not do anything that's going to create, you know, more self-doubt in them or any form of rejection or any kind of thing that's going to make them default to like a core negative belief that they have, right? So, or in what we call in trauma-informed work, the idea is that the last thing that we want to do is re-traumatize people. And I think if folks could kind of get on board with this idea of, I need to take a long, good look at myself before I start throwing rocks at anybody else's place, right? And so, and again, this, we've talked about it before on the original podcast, right? That's called personal responsibility.
Right.
And I think if we could start there and just be responsible for ourselves, which starts with being really, really self-aware and how am I behaving out in the world? And how do I want to be treated out in the world? And how can I be as impactful and helpful and of service to other people? I don't think that people would find themselves in a place where they felt like, you know, their environment was toxic or the people around them were toxic, because they would just make a change.
Right.
Right. And I know these are just words and it's easier said than done and all of that, but it requires a level of responsibility that I don't always see people take. I see people avoid more frequently than take responsibility.
Yeah. Well, it's easier.
Yeah,
I think it's the easy way.
Yeah. I think the second piece to that is a concept called benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
And as a person, when confronted with like a negative interaction, like we talked about it earlier, I don't go to the negative. Like, I always give someone the benefit of the doubt, and I think too frequently we are quick to just move to, that was intentional, someone right. They're after me, or they're, you know, fill in the blank. But
right.
We talked culture here, and part of just culture is to understand the why. We ask questions, and 99.9% of the time, guess what? Things result in a policy change. They result in a piece of equipment being added. You have to understand the why. So don't jump to conclusions and assume that, you know, someone's after you or they're a negative person. Give them the benefit of the doubt that what they're trying to do is
right
is good.
And I think that also comes back to, you know, people would rather take information from somewhere else, somebody else, rather than make their own decisions, right?
That's right.
Like, oh, everybody has said that this guy's a bad guy. So guess what? He's a bad guy.
Right.
Rather than, I'm one of the most non-biased. I like to think of myself as one of the most non-biased people. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to go off my own interactions with you, because everybody in this world is different and everybody has their own, you know, it treats everybody differently. And so I'm going to have that interaction and I'm going to make my decisions based on my interactions with you. While you might not get along with this person that I'm friends with, that doesn't mean that we can't get along. Right. And I think more people need to be open to that concept as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got one more question for both of you. How do we cultivate a mindset that focuses on success, and not just the success within our agency, but your own success as an individual?
I think personally that, so just like therapy, counseling, mental health, there's a stigma behind that. There's a similar, probably not quite as harsh stigma that surrounds like meditation.
Yeah.
Meditation, like I think for the layperson that, that pictures it, it's probably like a monk in a monastery up in the 10,000 foot, you know, with their fingers.
That's where I do my wrestling training.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
But it's different. And I think that you have to take time either at some point in the day, make time for yourself. And it is important like to recenter yourself and bring yourself back to like, why am I here? What am I doing? How are things going? And then creating goals for yourself. If there's obstacles or issues that you're encountering that you can't get past on your own, well, you need to talk to somebody. But if you've talked to somebody, it's realigning your priorities for the day and just keeping like your weaknesses like on the forefront and being sensitive to those and not letting yourself, don't let yourself be consumed by like the negative we talked about.
Right.
But it's bringing yourself back to like the why, like why I come to work is because we make a hell of a difference in the community. We're doing great things. I have 350 of you guys to support and I absolutely love doing that. Like it is my favorite thing. That is why I get up. And if I didn't think of those things, it would be very easy to be consumed with these processes are horrible. I'm not getting anything done.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that comes right back to being self-aware, right?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think I often say to people, if you went to see your MD and you walked in with symptoms of high blood pressure, they'd probably write you a script and most likely you would take it. Specifically, if it's for high blood pressure, you'd probably take it. Lots of times people don't take the meds that they've been given, but probably for high blood pressure, you might do it, right? And I always say, like, take my prescription. Here's my prescription for you. If you want to survive a long career here and you want to come out of it unscathed, meaning without a clinical diagnosis from the DSM-5, I would say, you know, number one is this process of self-awareness, which includes, I think, really practicing a disciplined breath work exercise every single day for 5 minutes. Andrew Huberman has, I think I've said this on here, has published an article last winter that basically says that cyclic sigh breathing is the best way to calm yourself down. We used to think it's Navy SEAL box breathing, but now Huberman's telling us differently. Based on heart rate variability data, a big study that he did out of Stanford. So cyclic sigh breathing is basically two long, slow inhales, one long, slow exhale. If you go to YouTube, you can find him, put in Andrew Huberman cyclic sigh breathing. He actually has a ball that contracts and you can breathe with him for 5 minutes. So it'll be like, so the ball will expand and contract with you while you breathe. So I would say one, do that every single day, create enough muscle memory in the discipline that you don't, it's no longer, you don't have to think about how do I calm myself down in a stressful moment. Your body's just going to do it for you. And I've seen it happen in my office. I had a cop come in mandated for some anger management stuff. And maybe, I don't know, you know, that was the first thing I started with. Okay, let's do some breathing. Let's practice breathing. And sure enough, like 4 weeks in, and he would come in and he would start at like a zero. And he would like increasingly, every moment of him talking, he'd amp himself up to like a 10, you know. And sure enough, like session four, he just middle of his conversation, he was like, and he just stopped himself, right? You become a witness to yourself the minute you start doing breath work exercises and the minute you start to do some meditative process. I don't care what you call it. I mean, the military's got some stuff out there called iRest, which is a longer kind of a 30-minute meditation, but it's really, I mean, that comes straight out of military, you know, research out of Walter Reed Hospital. In yoga, they call it yoga nidra. It's the same thing. Again, Andrew Huberman, he calls it something, something like non-sleep deep rest, NSDR. And it's like a 30, 40 minute guided meditation that will kind of, it's designed to deeply restore your central nervous system. If you could do just those two things alone, I your life would be transformed. And I tell people this all the time. And I also say, you know, I can't do it for you. It's one of those things that, like, you have to decide that these are the things that you're going to do. And then I would say number three, these are the top three things in my opinion. It's mindset, 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 right? Like, you have to be able to hear yourself. Why I say start with these first two things is that you need the self-awareness enough to be able to recognize when your mindset is off the trail.
Right.
You know, off the rails, off the tracks, trails. Right. Trails is tracks and rails. So I just think, you know, you have to witness yourself being like, oh, I'm awfully negative right now, so I need to change that up. And then to have some skills to be able to do it. For example, using gratitude immediately is one of the things that can shift you out of a negative mindset. To suddenly be like, oh my God, I am so lucky that I get to do this.
Right.
Instead of I have to do this, I get to do this.
Right, and that I think is how the mindset should be.
I think it's also important to realize that while it's helpful to you.
That's right.
Think of how you're impacting others.
Right.
Yes.
So not only are you causing yourself harm, but you're also harming others by you being negative. And
right.
Yeah.
And both of what you had to say goes along with mine. I say, I got two words, peace and grace.
Right.
Right. Give peace or make peace.
Yeah.
Right. So you might not get along with that partner. Maybe you guys have some differences, but if you can make peace, mm-hmm. your day goes better, right? You'll be happier. You'll be more successful. Right. And give grace. Give grace to everybody just because, like we said, you don't know what anybody is going through. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I say peace and grace, make peace with those, you know, you can get along with anybody for a shift.
Right.
Right. And then I think, you know, you start at one shift. Oh, it wasn't so bad. The next shift, it rolls into where maybe you're not best friends. Maybe you're not hanging out. Right. But you're good on shift and you create this work balance and make sure you give grace to everybody you come in contact with just because they might be having a bad day, just like everybody else does. And if those two things, along with what you guys said, they make us more successful individually, ultimately the end result is, as an agency, we all become more successful.
I would just add one more thing to that because you're reminding me that those three things that I said are I think, that on the top of the list. But I also feel like if you have poor communication skills, or aren't able to express yourself in a way that's effective, you're going to have problems.
Right.
And so I think the next thing is that you have to work on how do I effectively express myself so that I can get my needs met, let people know what is happening inside of me, but also do it in a way that's respectful and positive and seeking a win-win, you know, outcome.
Yeah. Which is self-awareness.
Always.
And being self-aware, you have to, when you recenter yourself, just remember how incredibly badass you are.
That's right.
Every single day.
Yes.
Always. Like
you are a small percentage of this world that gets to do these things.
Yeah.
You're trained, you're effective, you're making a difference. And because of that, you're a badass.
That's awesome. I agree, though. We're all badasses. So thanks to all the badasses out there for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this show, and we've got an amazing guest coming for the next episode. Can't wait to record. You guys have a great day. See ya.
This has been an Olive Pit production. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.